Well, the sports has stopped, but that doesn't mean we stop. It's Scoops with DannyMac.com coming to you from the Lou Fuse Automotive Studios. It is a Ben Fred Friday, and as always, staying with us, and we appreciate it, Henderson and Watercutty. See what they can offer you. Two guys, lawyers, helping folks in Missouri and Illinois, and in these uncertain times, helping a lot of people. Just see what they can do. Go to their website. They're available 24/7, stlcriminaldefense.com. stlcriminaldefense.com. Ben, as always, it's a Friday, and that means good morning to you. How are things?
Good morning, man. I'm doing well, all things considered, and all the important stuff is good. Everybody's healthy and going a little stir crazy, but you know, considering the circumstances, there are a lot worse things that could be going on.
I'm curious, from your perspective as being a sports writer, and sports is stopped, a lot of fans go, well, what do you write about? What's going on? I mean, there's still business news in sports, but what do you write about? What are you trying to do right now?
Well, the main thing is, you know, how do you kind of flex those creative muscles and use the time to come up with something that maybe you wouldn't have the opportunity to chase down in normal times. You know, the schedule's so packed, especially this time of the year, when you've got a million different leagues going and important games happening all over the place, that some things fall through the cracks. So I think it's a time to try to go look at those things that you would always say, hey, if I had time, I would write this. Okay, well, now there's no excuse, right? It's kind of like all these household chores we've got piled up. We've always said, hey, when I get time, I'll do those. Well, when you're spending every day at home, there really is no excuse not to find a way to do them. So looking at some of those ideas, and also too, I think trying to find things that are still newsworthy. There's so much news in the sports world, whether it's, you know, talking about what sports could look like when it comes back, talking about, you know, how the way we view sports and how that could potentially change, you know, something along the lines of the World Series statue popping up at Busch Stadium. A lot of people are talking about that. So there's angles there. So I think it's really important to keep an eye on what people are talking about, but also, you know, what should they be talking about? What can we use this downtime for to dig into and maybe revisit that tends to get overlooked sometimes?
Give me one of those stories. Is there something that has piqued your interest, whether as a reader? I know you scour books and various newspapers. You follow different writers. You yourself have done some really interesting stories. Is there one or a couple that have really stood out during this time for you?
Well, one of my favorite ones was talking to Aeneas Williams, you know, the Hall of Famer, Rams great, who has a church, has really made his home, his life here in St. Louis after he was done playing for the Rams, and caught up with him about his how things are going for him and how he's handling this time. We've got so many people who part of their identity is going to church every Sunday, and now they can't go. And what's it like to try to lead a flock when you can't see them in person? So I thought he was really good about that. I did that for last Sunday's paper. Another thing that I've always had an eye on, but haven't really had a chance to dig into, and I won't give too much away here, but Maryville University is basically become a powerhouse, for esports, which I disagree with calling esports, but I won't go on a tangent there. It's competitive video games. Normally, would I write about that? Probably not. But I'm fascinated by this program they developed. They're like becoming like the Alabama football of esports. And they have a great team that's won multiple national championships in competitive gaming. And the guy who started it, who I'm working on a story about, is a homegrown young man who has basically become the Nick Saban of esports. So that's probably something I wouldn't normally write about, but I'm starting to do some reporting on that just because I think it's fun. I mean, I don't necessarily think it's sports. I think he actually agrees with me in terms of the definition of sports, but it's interesting and it's something that's happening in our backyard. So a little bit more willing to maybe write a curveball story or two, but just trying to stay busy, man. And the one thing that I will appreciate and echo here is I think everybody is so bored that people are more willing to pick up a phone and answer. You know, I can get calls back. Not that I wouldn't normally, but it just seems like people are more willing to talk and participate in interviews because everybody's kind of sitting around twiddling their thumbs a little bit.
You know, you've really disappointed me in this because as a parent of four, my kids are like, you know, I'm going to be a pro golfer. Another guy said, I'm going to be a pro golfer. My girl said pro golfer. I got a guy that says I'm going to be a U.S. Olympian in soccer. Let's see. I got another one that's going to play at Alabama. And now if they hear this, they're going to say, Dad, Maryville has just jumped to the top of my list.
Well, I told the, you know, my dad, I didn't play video games growing up because my dad always told me, he said, you'll get fat, you know, if you sit around and play video games all day. So in order to spite him, I got fat anyway, just without the video games. So I don't know that that's the approach, but it's harder to tell your kid not to sit around and play video games all day when some of these kids are making millions of dollars doing it, you know, getting full ride scholarships to play video games. So who knows, man, maybe that's the future. I don't know, but there certainly is a market for it. It's not my cup of tea, but that doesn't mean that it's not interesting to folks. But I think your rule is best. You send your kids outside and tell them, don't come back till the sun goes down. I think that's still the right way to go about it personally.
That's how we do it. But believe me, there's been a little bit more leniency lately on the video games. Trust me. Cause we're all trying to keep our sanity, which is all, sure. It's a good thing. So I'm really curious because we know that Major League Baseball and the NBA and the NHL and any sport you talk about, they all have different models. If and when we can come back and see sports, whether there's fans in the stands or not, we'll get into that in just a moment. But the models are there, and it's June 1st, June 15th, July, whatever the case, May 15th. It doesn't matter, just for argument's sake. Do we see all sports coming back at once? Do you see that happening, or do you see one sport? Now, UFC has got an island, literally, that they're going to go to, but do you wait for one sport to maybe say, hey, we're going to do this, but we're all going to do it collectively?
Man, that's a good question. I think there's clearly probably more pressure internally on the NBA and NHL to get back because they're in the middle of their season. I mean, the NHL is in the meat, the best part of their season, approaching the postseason. So I think in terms of desire to get back, theirs would be the highest, especially because and shared. It's important to remember in the NHL that postseason revenue is so much of the overall pot that the league makes, and it's split pretty evenly between players and teams. So there's a shared interest there. Additionally, next year, the upcoming year's salary cap will be directly determined by the amount of money made in the previous season. So there's a lot of reasons NHL should be pushing as much as possible based in terms of, you know, their finances. Personally, I think that, and this does not at all, I want to be clear here, I'm not saying I agree with this. I think the idea of social distancing in any pro sport when you're playing is ridiculous. I mean, golf is really the only thing, perhaps tennis, really the only, maybe NASCAR, you know, if you don't have the guys interact at all, they're just in their cars. Those are really the only things I can think of that you can have with that, with any realistic social distancing. I do think and I don't necessarily agree with this. I do think physical, contact sports are going to be maybe given probably an unfair, criticism when it comes to returning compared to other stuff. So baseball can say, well, we'll try to keep guys apart. Now that goes out the window. Every time a pitcher licks his fingers, every time there's a tag play, every time a guy high fives, because they'll still do that. But now it is going to be perceived, I think, differently than hockey players knocking the heck out of each other, football players tackling each other. So I think if you're a non-contact sport, if contact is not the definition of the sport, I think those leagues might have a better chance just in terms of public perception in coming back sooner. Now that's just kind of my unscientific guess here. And I in no way think that baseball players are less likely to give it to each other than hockey players. I think once you're in the sport, you know, you're going to have guys interacting and teammates and opponents. But I do think just public perception wise, those contact sports might have a little harder of a time winning the approval of the public and some politicians and top health people in terms of making those decisions. Or there could be, you know, another angle here, and it's that they all get together and they say, they all do it at once.
And that's my point. Yeah.
They kind of all jump in together to try to spare criticism or pushback if they all come up with a date where everybody can launch. And that would probably make a lot more sense. Again, the question will be when. And until there's a vaccine or some sort of therapeutic treatment of this that really gets enough clearance to be used widespread and not something that has, you know, maybe small samples of working, then it's going to be hard, I think, for the people that have to sign off on this, you know, the governors and the political leaders and you know, the health experts. It's going to be hard for them, I think, to greenlight this, even if there are, you know, all these scenarios where they feel like they can do it and impact as few as people as possible. The other aspect of this too, and we'll probably talk about this with the baseball stuff, is what are the players willing to give up? Because if the players are, you know, if they're willing to spend a season or a postseason or, you know, months and months of a baseball season in a confined hotel without seeing their family or their friends, then maybe this could work. But I know some players will not be willing to give that up.
Henderson and Watercutty, a proud sponsor of ScoopsWithDannyMac.com, a full-service criminal defense firm dedicated to helping individuals fight criminal charges in Missouri and Illinois. State, federal, municipal courts, think Henderson, Watercutty. Protecting your rights, defending your freedom. Number to call, 314-645-4400. 314-645-4400. Visit their website, stlcriminaldefense.com. Let's talk a little bit about the Arizona bubble plan, if you will, for Major League Baseball. What was your reaction to hearing that maybe they could quarantine players, staff, support staff, all the different things that go into this? We'll dive into it. But what was your initial reaction to hearing that?
Well, it didn't surprise me. I mean, some people think, oh my gosh, there's no way this can work. But here's the deal. They're going to be talking about ideas. So some of these ideas are going to get out. We know how baseball works. They come up with a tentative plan, and there's almost always a trial balloon that gets out, and baseball says, this is premature. This isn't what's actually happening, but yet it's out there. So I think this is what baseball always does, where it comes up with a plan that may or may not work, and it kind of floats it to see how it's received. And that's what's happened on previous rules and previous changes baseball has made. So we're seeing it happen here again. Of course, they're discussing things in ways this could work. I see some problems with it. And, you know, it's frustrating to me because here's what happens, where this comes out and you say, hey, I see some potential hangups here. And then you're immediately criticized for saying, oh, you're so negative. Why can't you be positive? Well, I guess we can all be, you know, we can all be Dabo Swinney, where we say it's going to come back, it's going to be great. But, you know, our job is to actually vet this thing and see if it could and couldn't work. And there are some problems with these scenarios. Let's start with what I mentioned earlier is, you know, a baseball player who's a father of three going to say, yes, I will play the whole season or as long as needed away from my family and not be able to see them in person. Because if you allow families to enter that setting, that controlled environment, that hotel, that quarantined hotel, if you will, then that increases the risk for exposure that much more every time the family leaves. The thing here, this will work well until a player gets coronavirus, and it's probably inevitable that a player will get it at some point. What happens when that happens? Do you shut down that team? Do you shut down just that player? Do you shut down the entire league? What do you do? So, you know, this only really works as long as you keeps all the players from getting it. Perhaps that's unrealistic, but I guess you could try it and see how long you could go with the determination of we'll figure that out when we get there, because that's kind of what we're all doing. So if that's the plan, you have to really try to minimize the exposure for everyone who is, you know, influential and elemental to having these games. That means no family, no interactions with people other than teammates and guys who are absolutely necessary. How long would they be willing to do that? They would have to sign off on this, of course, the union. The other thing would be the fact that you have to play all these games in Arizona, apparently. It's hot as hell in Arizona in the summer.
Oh, yeah.
And not every place is air-conditioned. You know, you're going to have – are players going to be willing to do that? How does that work out? The other thing, too, because you're not going to have a minor league system going, how big do the rosters get? You know, because you're going to have injuries, you're going to have setbacks, you're going to have probably a lot of pitching injuries. So how big are the rosters willing to get? Some of this stuff is goofy, like this idea that you're going to have the players social distance themselves in the stands as opposed to be in the dugout. I guess that shows a good perception, but, you know, it's not like there's not going to be a tag play at second base. It's not like the umpire is going to be, you know, not going to be interacting with the catcher. And I don't think you're going to want to go to an electronic strike zone in a season that includes so much more change, because imagine all the problems that could happen with that and all the hijinks that might take place in such an altered setting. So I see some problems. The biggest one being, I have a hard time, maybe I'm wrong, and I know everybody wants to get paid, so getting paid is the unifying factor here. But you know a lot of players. I just don't see players saying, yeah, you know, we'll go to a hotel and not be around anybody else other than our team for an extended period of time. I see them pushing back against that, and I think some will.
I do too. And I think some players that maybe have been established and have made plenty of money say, you know what, yeah, I don't really want to go through this. How about no fans in the stands? Whether or not it's an Arizona bubble plan or maybe at Busch Stadium, it seems like the prevailing thought is that if sports return, it would be without fans in the stands. As it pertains to baseball, would it bother you if you saw a game with no fans in the stands, but it was on television?
It doesn't. I mean, I don't think it's not as good as it would be, right? I mean, ideally, we're all there, you know, and including, you know, media, fans, everybody. But if I think ultimately fans want to see games, whether they're there or not. So for me, I think any game is better than an altered game, or better than no game. An altered game is better than no game. It's kind of where I sit on this, and I think most fans agree. Ideally, you know, you might have a few romantics who say, yeah, let's wait until it's back in full force and everybody's there together. But I think 9 out of 10 people would say, yeah, I'd like to be able to turn on my TV and see a game going. I'd like to have my fantasy league active. I'd like to get sports back, even if it's without fans in the stands. So I think baseball would agree with that too. Talking to John Mozeliak, I said, what are you hearing? And he said, most people are telling me they want to see games. And I agree with him.
I do too. I think even if there's not fans in the stands, but you have, as a fan, a chance to watch something that has meaning, and it's not a rerun of every single game now that we've seen and chronicled in the history of sports, I think people want that. I just think people need a diversion. And if we're finding out anything about, and we're finding out a lot about a different subjects, but with as it pertains to sports and baseball, boy, does baseball play a big role in a lot of folks' lives in America, and certainly that's the case here in St. Louis.
And I think the ratings on some of these replayed games are not what some of these carriers are hoping they would be. You know, people, Tony La Russa said it best when I talked to him a few weeks ago. The problem with watching the replays is you know what's going to happen.
Yeah.
And even if it, no matter how great it is, you've been there and done that. And, you know, it is watching something that there's no suspense, there's no intrigue, there's no unknown to it. And unless you're just a, you know, it's such a great game. And really, like, you could probably whittle the list of games that needed to be rewatched down to like 10. And we're past the point of 10 at this point.
Oh, yeah.
So at some point you're watching, you know, just seeing something that you've seen before is I don't watch movies twice very often. It's got to be a really good movie. And I can probably count on one hand the amount of time to go, God, I'd like to see that movie again. And I feel the same way about games.
Henderson and Watercutty, a proud sponsor of ScoopsWithDannyMac.com, a full-service criminal defense firm dedicated to helping individuals fight criminal charges in Missouri and Illinois. State, federal, municipal courts, think Henderson, Watercutty. Protecting your rights, defending your freedom. Number to call, 314-645-4400. 314-645-4400. Visit their website, stlcriminaldefense.com. I want to do a segment as we wrap it up on some of the news in college sports. And I'm going to start with the head football coach at Oklahoma State. Mike Gundy held a teleconference the other day, but one of the quotes it's making the rounds around really the country, quote, the NCAA, the presidents of the universities, the Power Five conference commissioners, the athletic directors need to be meeting right now, and we need to start coming up with answers. This is in a 20-minute monologue to start off his call. In my opinion, we need to bring out players back. They are 18, 19, 20, 21, and 22-year-olds, and they are healthy, and they have the ability to fight the virus off. If that is true, then we sequester them and continue because we need to run money through the state of Oklahoma. Ben, I know you've been involved with college sports for a long time. You hear that. What do you think?
I think Mike Gundy should probably stop talking about things that aren't related to football, specific X's and O's, because every time he does this, he makes himself look kind of hypocritical. I'll agree with some of what he said. And the truth of the matter is, guys who are that age, 18 to 20, let's say 25-year-olds, who are in good health, are, you know, in a position where they're probably not going to be killed by coronavirus. And you can even find some educated people who would argue, hey, the best thing for all of us might be if younger, healthier people are exposed to the virus, so they build up antibodies. So this is not becoming, you know, as severe of a plague as it seems to be right now. There's some sense there. It's a little bit of Darwinism, but there's some truth to that. You know, younger, healthier people who have antibodies to it are hopefully less likely to get it again. And that's kind of how we build up immunity to something over the course of the long term. Gundy's problem, though, is that he's I think it was Dan Wolkin who said he's saying the quiet part out loud. He's saying this is a huge money generator for our campus, for our state, and it's being done on the backs of players who are not compensated for being the driving engine in that sort of economy. And that's the kind of stuff that years from now, when there's the depositions and the lawsuits and whatever it is going to take that topples the NCAA, comments like this are going to come up, because it's a college coach who makes millions of dollars. I mean, Mike Gundy gets paid a ton of money because every time there's a job opening that comes about, he uses the opening as leverage to get paid more. Here's a millionaire talking about how unpaid players are needing to put themselves at health risk in order to generate this income for the university, for his athletics department, for the state of Oklahoma. And it's the kind of thing that if you really follow the ins and outs of college athletics, you're going, oh God, probably shouldn't say that out loud, Mike, even if it's true, because it makes your whole system look exactly as it is. And usually they do a better job of kind of hiding from that reality a little bit. So that's how it struck me. And also in general, every time Gundy goes off on one of these tangents, he really exposes himself for being, you know, very hypocritical in this sense. I wish that guys like Gundy and guys like Dabo Swinney would actually use their platforms to be knowledgeable about the virus. And I don't mean just spreading panic. I don't mean, you know, and there's nothing, absolutely nothing wrong with saying, hey, I hope that we beat this back sooner than expected, and I hope we're playing this fall, and I'm going to keep thinking in that way. No one is arguing against positivity. No one is cheering for the virus. No one's sane, at least. But, you know, encouraging folks to be smart about the facts and encouraging folks to understand that probably the best way to get ahead of this thing is to minimize the impact now, so we don't have these soaring hospitalizations. That would be encouraging. And some of these coaches have used that platform to do just that. We've seen Ed Orgeron do that. We've seen, you know, we have seen Nick Saban do that. But it's unfortunate there are a couple coaches always who seem to have a warped version of reality, and then they use their platform to spread misinformation. So he looks hypocritical at best. And I'm not all that surprised, but I'm sure he thinks all the critics and the haters are out to get him. And that's the problem here, is it turns people like us into quote unquote naysayers. We are the ones who get labeled as rooting for the virus when we point out the hypocrisy in a college coach who gets paid millions demanding the players are brought back and pushed through coronavirus so he can make his money. It's not a good look.
Not a good look at all. There's a lot of fans that follow college basketball, clearly, and they're seeing all these names go into the draft. What does that mean? I have a pretty good understanding, but for those that are listening, explain what that means when you see Hassan French, Jordan Goodwin, some of the kids from Illinois and Mizzou, and they're like, whoa, man, what's going on here? What does it mean?
Yeah, it seems to be kind of some leftover confusion from how it used to be. You know, it used to be when a guy declared for the draft, it means he was going to into the draft. There was no turning back. It's changed in recent years. Guys can go through that process. And what that process looks like this year who knows? So we'll get back to that in a second. But guys can say, hey, I want to get checked out by the scouts. I want to go to the combine if there is one or whatever they come up with this year. I want to get basically feedback. And the feedback will say something like, hey, we see you as a potential first round pick, or hey, we see you as a lock for a first round pick, or hey, we see you as a second round pick, or hey, we think you need to go back to school. It can be a various degrees of information that can be received. They are then allowed to decide after that evaluation, do they want to go to the league or do they want to go back to school? There's a date with which they can withdraw by. And as long as they don't hire an agent, you know, which with that puts a severe, you know, hard endpoint on their college eligibility. As long as they don't hire an agent, then they can go back to school. So a guy like Mitchell Smith at Mizzou, he's not going to go to the draft. He'd be crazy. And if he does, then he made a bad decision because he's not going to get drafted. And he would be wasting his college eligibility. What he should do and what Konzo Martin has encouraged him to do is go get checked out, listen to what the NBA has to say about him, and then go back and have that motivation for next season. Because if he doesn't, then the first time he goes through that evaluation, it will be the make or break time where he doesn't get to go back to college. So guys like French, Goodwin, I would be shocked if they're not back at SLU next year. I think they know they have a special season coming. And unless the guy is told you're a first round pick, then they really should go back, especially if they can work their way into a first round pick in the following year. And I think French and Goodwin could be in that conversation potentially. I think Io DeSumo is a great example of a guy who probably could get drafted if he sticks in the draft. But if he goes back to Illinois for his junior season in what could be a really good year for the Illini, then he would probably be a first round pick the upcoming draft. And there's so much more security, so much more guaranteed money in that first round. So it's not like it used to be where a guy says he's going to go test the draft and he has to go. A lot of these guys will be back. I think most of them will be.
Mizzou and KU, football-wise, they have now signed an agreement to play 4 years, so the border war, at least in football, is back on. And I think anybody that enjoys the old history of Mizzou and Kansas will love to hear that kind of news.
Absolutely. Standing round of ovation and applause for Jim Stirk and Jeff Long, the athletic directors who made this happen. I did not think that this was going to happen with Bill Self at Kansas. I really didn't, because I didn't think there would be anyone in charge there who would make it happen without his approval. And clearly Jeff Long either did it without his approval or got him on board, and Bill Self became convinced that Missouri had served its punishment long enough from joining the SEC. But you know, this was something that felt like such a silly thing after they had that basketball, event, that exhibition to raise money for I think it was tornado relief, wasn't it? And they made a ton of money, and it was just a silly exhibition, but it was awesome. And it was a reminder that, man, this is a great rivalry, and it's silly that it's not happening. And I think that kind of jarred the pieces loose, and it took a new set of eyes in Stirk and Long, and credit to both of them for continuing the conversation that got this done, because it is a great rivalry, and it was gone long enough to remind us of that, but not long enough where it lost some of that intensity. So it will not be the same as it was when they were in the Big 12, but it's going to be pretty good.
Hey, Ben, great stuff. We'll continue as we wait for sports, but every Friday morning, I know fans enjoy listening to what you have to say about sports, certainly in our community and some of the news worldwide. So I appreciate it, and be safe, be healthy, and we'll talk next Friday.
Sounds good, man. Yeah, I'm thankful to the folks who are still tuning in on their Fridays, and thankful to the sponsors who are sticking with us too.
You bet. Well put. Thanks, Ben.
Henderson and Watercutty, a proud sponsor of ScoopsWithDannyMac.com. A full-service criminal defense firm dedicated to helping individuals fight criminal charges in Missouri and Illinois. State, federal, municipal courts, think Henderson, Watercutty. Protecting your rights, defending your freedom. Number to call, 314-645-4400. 314-645-4400. Visit their website, stlcriminaldefense.com.